The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast, presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. My co-hosts for this one are Chris Felico at the Italian, or actually Italian Stallion, and Matt Holmes at MLB at Matt. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Before we get into it, quick temperature check. Chris, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
-3.
Yikes.
The Knicks aren't helping.
That's fair. I couldn't give a crap about the Knicks, but I understand since you're in New York, that does hurt. Matt, what's your temp?
Yeah, the weather's warm outside, but I'm going a low 1.2. It's cold. I'm cold on the socks. The bats are cold. The team is cold. The season's cold right now. Been a tough go.
Yeah, it's brutal. Our very beloved teammate, Jeremy Schilling, number 4 on the field, but number 1 in our hearts, had a 1.9 just a couple shows ago. And I don't think I could go much higher than that. I mean, I'm going to kind of echo Jeremy's 1.9, 1.8, 1.2 from you, Matt. This team just finds a new way to get worse and worse. And literally, we were just talking it right before we went on the air. The only good news about this, if you're, you know, ownership for the Boston Red Sox, is your country is now hosting the biggest sporting event in the world for the first time in 4 years. Almost makes you wonder if this is just like perfectly timed, you know, since there may not be baseball next year and all that jazz. People aren't really talking about the Red Sox completely right now because they're too busy talking about Team USA, which is exactly what John Henry, Sam Kennedy, and a lot of those clowns need. So we're all aligned here. This team is just finding new ways to suck and not get the job done. But I mean, some comments today and over the last couple days from Sam Kennedy calling this Red Sox season embarrassing and unacceptable. They find themselves 12 games under 500, 5.5 games back out of a playoff spot. I mean, I don't know how anyone could try to make a case that we're only a couple games out. You're out. You've been out. You've been out since the season started. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole and then end up taking over the show. So, Matt, why don't you take over?
Yeah, it was oddly refreshing for once to hear Sam Kennedy speak. I mean, if you hear about some of the comments, of course, a big one was him saying, firing Breslow is off the table, which, since he has been known to lying, I view that as a double negative, which means it very much could be on the table. You know, he called it embarrassing and sort of tried to own up to it, which, again, I thought was a little refreshing to at least have him admit publicly what we've all been talking about, what we all know about. But I think the kind of key, if you're listening closely to what he said, the key points in there were some foreshadowing for maybe some decisions that are up ahead for the Sox, right? And he said if things don't change dramatically, then they may have to pivot, right? And it would be irresponsible for them to do so. Another thing I agree with him on, right? If you think about it, I think that totally means that they're going to be pivoting to sellers, and as they should, right? 6 games out of the wild card, and I think it's less about the games back at this point than the amount of teams you have to leapfrog, right? I think that's the more overcoming challenge, regardless of, even if we're still 3 games back, there's, you know, 5 or 6 teams in front of you that all have better teams on paper and are playing better baseball. So if I'm hearing what I think I'm hearing earlier, then I'm thinking they're going to be pivoting to sellers, right? I would love for them to pivot to releasing Craig Breslow of his duties. I think with this World Cup coming up, there's no better time. Of course, they could bury that in a headline and let the soccer world take over the headlines while we work on maybe improving this roster or this team. But Yeah, I think that's really the foreshadowing there from Sam Kennedy, which is the Sox are going to start pivoting to sellers, which, you know, just a few weeks ago, they were aggressively shopping for a right-handed bat. We all see what those results came out being, which was diddly. So I think, it's just a matter of time before they accept their fate and start selling off some pieces here. And at this point, that's probably the right move, candidly, right? It would be irresponsible to not make any changes. We obviously all know one change that we all want on the top, but things need to change. This is just the definition of insanity right now, doing the same things over and over and getting the same results.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree. It's extremely, head-scratching and just frustrating to hear him say that, you know, he reiterated multiple times how embarrassing this is, unacceptable, but we're not getting rid of Craig Breslow, which I agree, Matt. At face value, he lies, so double negative. There's a chance that maybe it is on the table, we fire him. And no better time, I think, than the World Cup. And I want the Boston headlines to read, "The Red Sox deliver Craig Breslow a red card," and just get him the hell out of Boston. That would be amazing. Probably won't happen, though, because it would just be too good to be true at this point. But I think as far as the comments of the pivoting, it was interesting because I was actually listening to the interview. I think it was on the Greg Hill show is when it happened. And it almost seemed like he was expecting to get pressed on the whole right-handed bat a little bit harder from the people that were interviewing him. And it was almost like he was trying to justify, like, well, obviously we would pivot at this point. Like, why wouldn't we with the condition and state of the team? And everyone's like, yeah, no, like we agree you should be sellers. So it's almost a foregone conclusion at this point that the Boston Red Sox in theory should be sellers. Now, will they be? I don't know. Because the truth is we are still relying on Craig Breslow to execute that. And by God, that scares the living hell out of me at this point.
The thing that really kind of upset me and annoyed me the most was this conversation day in, multiple times, about we're getting a right-handed bat. Red Sox are shopping for a bat. Meanwhile, they're getting their clock cleaned day in and day out. So Garrett Crochet's not coming back, right? You still don't have, you know, Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck. They're nowhere near being back. Brian Baio got relegated to the, that's a soccer term for those paying attention, demoted to the AAA. And he struck out 7 over 5 innings, allowed 1 hit, solo shot. That's it. Only mistake, only blemish in 5 innings in AAA. We're probably dumb enough to bring him back up to Boston already and say, oh, he's fixed, he's all set. But man, oh man, when you looked at the way that some of these teams were built, as soon as Garrett Crochet went down, if you weren't immediately looking for a right-handed bat right there and then, knowing you were going to lose 20% of your starting rotation, arguably the best starting pitcher in the American League. I know he's having a blippy year, but still I'd rather have Garrett Crochet than literally anybody else in the American League, and that includes Tarik Skubal. I think that Skubal is one arm explosion away from a final contract and then being done, blowing it out. Is that probably going to happen? No. Could it happen? Sure. Do I want it to happen? No, it'd be bad for baseball. But it's so infuriating hearing that we're in the market for a right-handed bat and we're 5.5 games out of a playoff spot. We're 12 games under 500. You're frustrated and embarrassed with how the way that the team has gone. But your president of baseball operations, he's not in any risk of losing his job. And you're right, Matt. You did mention the double negative. But it still shouldn't upset us any less to hear that, because that does fuel all of the fans' fire. He's the one who's supposed to be the architect behind constructing this team. He has literally, it's like you're on a submarine. You're, I don't know how many thousands of feet underneath water, and you pull the pin from a grenade and you just throw it and hope it doesn't go off. That's what this feels like right now. You've doomed everybody on that sub to death. That's what this feels like. We are all going down with the ship and none of us have the choice. He's the captain of the boat. He's the captain of the sub. And he doesn't look like he is giving a hoot at how bad this is going. Not even an ounce of remorse either. Like, I was reading one comment like, oh man, finally Durbin got a 2-homer game. We lost that game. I don't care if he hit four home runs. We still lost the game. This has been beyond frustrating, and it's not getting any better, guys. It's been brutal. This is a crap product, and they're trying to, you know, make it seem like it's not that bad. I want the type of GM that can sell ice to an Eskimo. That's the type of guy that I want. Not a guy who craps his pants and changes his shirt like Josh Beckett said. That's what we have. That's what we don't need. And it's just mounting frustrations because Breslow is in no risk of losing his job because he's done a fantastic job so far. This is a guy that as soon as his contract is up in Boston, whether he gets fired or not, doesn't matter. When he's done with the Boston Red Sox, will never be in a front office position ever again. Mark my words. Anything else you guys want to add? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope not. But I've seen crazier things in professional sports. But yeah, I don't necessarily know. I don't know what the next step is for this team. There was a lot of interesting comments, and I think what would be good is to maybe get into kind of what the potential that is if we do become sellers, right? Because I do think that is very much on the table, or I should say is at least should be on the table. And I would be very interested in hearing from you gentlemen. Who do you think are the top three trade candidates or casualties, however you want to put it, for the Boston Red Sox if we do go into seller mode?
Well, I think we'll all agree that Chapman is probably the highest ranked gem that we have. That's just movable contract wise, performance wise, and a premium closer on a market where, let's face it, relievers move all the time, but it's really hard to get a top quality top two reliever in the game. So Chapman, definitely our highest asset right now. Outside of that, I don't know what you have really for some movable pieces. I mean, Duran had a great May, but he's kind of slumped back a little bit too. And I would think that his trade value is higher, except they still haven't traded him after his last two seasons. So I'm not so sure how other GMs feel about a guy like Duran. Contreras, obviously playing well, I hate to say it, but he's probably of value to other teams. But I would have to say Sonny Gray would definitely be in the top three as well, just with the contract, the way he's been pitching, a starter. Teams will always be looking for arms, so definitely Chapman, Gray, and probably Contreras, unfortunately, although I don't think they move on from Contreras because then you'd really be selling all your offense at that point.
I'm 100% with you. I think that you've got to acknowledge that Aroldis Chapman is the hottest option right now. He's one of the best closers in baseball, not named Mason Miller right now. Mason Miller has, if he can continue this for another 10 to 12 years, has probably got that strikeout as a closer record locked up with a button on it. He's just insane with strikeouts. He throws 102. He's just insane. And if he doesn't get injured, he's going to continue being a force in baseball. So that's one. I do think it's special that Aroldis Chapman is expecting, if he does get traded back to New York, he doesn't have control over where he gets moved, but he's got an option for 27. I think it's $13 million for next season as well. He's going to be worth $13 million considering how much some closers get, especially when you have a guy with a sub-1 ERA. If you don't think that's worth it, then I think, again, you're an idiot. But New York would be stupid to not try to get him back on there. He's familiar with that team. He's familiar with that ballpark. And all Cashman has to do is say, I was wrong. I made a mistake. That's all you have to do. Acknowledge. Show some accountability. You've won one World Series in 26 years. You can afford to say two words to your fans. Two words for your fans. So that's one. I also think Garrett Whitlock is on that list. I think that Garrett Whitlock has a possibility of being one of the, arguably one of your top eighth inning guys in relief. I don't want to see him as a starter ever again. I don't want to see his name uttered in the same sentence as the word rotation, but I think he's on that list as well. Sonny Gray, I don't know. He does have, you know, kind of a crazy contract this year. St. Louis is paying a huge portion of it. But people have mentioned, you know, Yoshida being on that list. That's a salary dump. That's going to come up attached with a pick if we do that. I don't think that's going to happen. And Jaren Duran is the other one. And I don't want to see Jaren Duran go anywhere. I think he speaks his mind. It may not be the most appropriate thoughts that come out of his mouth, but you know what? I stand behind him. I don't think that everything he said is unjustified. I think some things may be inappropriate or unacceptable. But overall, I think if fans chirp him about mental health, yeah, I hope that fan gets hit by a bus. I really do. There's just no place for it. You're paying to watch a performance, not to insult the performance. That's not a part of the ticket. That's not how it works. You're not going to a damn comedy show, right? If you want to, you know, fool around with yourself, you can do that at home. You don't have to do that at a ballpark. So I would say Aroldis Chapman, Whitlock, and sadly, I think that Duran, albeit I don't like him being that third option, would probably be your third name. The only other one that would be considered, and it would just be the most Boston Red Sox thing ever, would be by trading Brian Bayo. And it's just because I feel like another team would do what they did with Kyle Harrison. Switch up the arm slot, drop it 17 or 27 degrees, whatever it was, and all of a sudden you're a Cy Young contender. Bayo can throw close to 100, 98, 99. He can really hum one by you. I hope it's not just that one little tweak and he's back in, and it would suck to see him pitching for another team dominating. Absolute dominating.
Yeah, I think I just want to comment on Chapman really quick. I hope he gets traded. I mean, what he's doing is just incredible. He is just a freak of nature at his age, getting better. The numbers he's putting up, and it's kind of a shame that we're not talking about it more or giving him the stage or platform to do it on a bigger stage, because he's just on a dumpster fire last place team. But he, I know he's had some issues in the past, but he has been flat out dealing since he got to the Sox, and I think he could really be a valuable chip for a team making a run. So that being said, I hope he doesn't go to the Yankees and help them out. But I just think he deserves a chance to do it on the bigger stage, and a team the way he's been pitching would be lucky to have him. And really quick on Yoshida and even Bayo, as much as I would love to see those guys pack their bags and shipped out of town, I just think they're worthless. I think even if we said we're going to take their whole contract on, either one of those guys, who's really going to take them? What teams are they going to really improve? I mean, Yoshida has what, 30 career home runs in his 4 years in the bigs. I mean, he's a singles merchant at best. He just, you know, ground balls to the right-hand side of the field. So I just think those guys are literally immovable. The only way you get rid of them is biting the bullet and DFAing. And if you DFA'd him and even Story, who's hurt right now, you're probably better off like letting the kids play, and you're probably going to be a better team because of it, especially the way we are now. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't think you can give either of those guys away right now, Bayo or Yoshida.
Let me ask you a question about Yoshida real quick, because you're absolutely right. I had to look back at it, and I'm like, there's no way he's only got 30 home runs in four seasons. He's 30 home runs, 164 RBIs. Guess how many stolen bases he has this year? Or in his career?
I don't know how many in his career, but I do know that I think he's 100% on his stolen bases, but it's probably 100%. Like 15 or so, give or take, you know, has
14
to be
for 14. Like, I found that to be a very interesting statistic, but you're right.
Picks his times carefully. Very just very like his home smart, runs, right? You know?
Yeah. Once every never. And I didn't think that I was going to see Caleb Durbin have more home runs than Masataka Yoshida. I didn't see that coming. I really didn't. This guy, I mean, in 2024, he had 108 games playing, had 10 homers, 56 RBIs. In the last 2 years combined, he's at 101 games, 5 homers, 36 RBIs. I don't think anyone's going to take this guy on and be like, I can change him. The only stadium that I think that would do wonders for his numbers would be Yankee Stadium, because they don't have a real right field. That's it. I really don't think he would succeed anywhere else. I think he would go homerless if he went to San Francisco. But yeah, I mean, damn, man, that's just a weird, crazy stat. I just wanted to talk about it briefly. Chris, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, on that stat, I think the only reason he's probably 14 for 14 is he generally is a pinch hit in the bottom or top of the ninth with two outs. So when he does occasionally actually get on base, they're letting him take the base. So because at that point, the Sox are probably down 3 or 4 runs. Him being on second is meaningless. That's one thing. But Bayo's an interesting one, because I actually do think that there's teams probably dumb enough to think that they could fix him. And who knows, maybe there is someone that could. He He's also on such a reasonable contract, and he's still technically so quote-unquote young that I could see a team, especially with the, you know, potential of a salary cap and what that might look like, teams that have a high payroll relative to their pitching staff saying, you know what, we're probably going to have to get rid of one of these guys coming out of the lockout. What, we could take a chance on a Brian Bello, and even if we miss, he's such a reasonable contract in comparison to some of these other pitchers that are even number twos, threes, or fours in the MLB right now, that there might be someone willing to take that risk. I 100% agree. There's no one that's going to take that risk on Yoshida, because there's, I mean, he's the only way you're trading him is if it's a salary dump, because you're taking on that much larger of a contract. Like if you were taking on a Tatis and some, and like an Xander Bogaerts in the same deal, and you threw him in there as a throwaway, a team like that would maybe be willing to do it because you're eating so much money on other contracts. Other than that, there's absolutely no way. I think we're all in agreement. Aroldis Chapman is the number one candidate, most likely to be traded. I do think it was interesting the comments that he made, in that he's basically would be okay with going to the Yankees as long as he got a sorry from Brian Cashman. It would really suck if we traded him back there, though, and he like, that's the last thing I need to see right now. With as bad as the Boston Red Sox are, is this guy throwing 103 miles an hour and getting the Yankees deep into a playoff run, I would probably vomit. But I think number two for me, I actually do think it is Sonny Gray, because right now I know you basically have his old team, the Cardinals, eating some of that contract, and he has an option for next year for $30 million, which more than likely the Sox weren't going to pick up. I don't think that the new team is going to pick it up unless there is baseball. And if there isn't baseball, then it really doesn't matter at that point, right? You're not picking up the option. No harm, no foul. He's pitching well. He's primed to be on a team that is going to make a deep playoff run. And then it's interesting for me. I don't necessarily – I've got like Connor Wong. I know there's been rumors around that. I just don't necessarily know if the value proposition makes sense, because what are you really going to get for Connor Wong unless someone loses a key catcher on their roster – and they're resulting to going to their backup who has very limited MLB experience, then I could potentially see it. Jarren Duran, I almost feel like that move hasn't happened, and it probably never will. I think that Craig Breslow overvalues Jarren Duran. I do agree with Charlie. I actually kind of like having Jarren Duran at this point. And if you're not going to get a great package, like, why get rid of him just to get rid of him at that point?
Well, so for sorry. I'll let you finish before going to Jaron.
No, I was going to say, so I think maybe the most likely is Whitlock. The only scary thing about that is if you were to get rid of Aroldis Chapman and Garrett Whitlock, what the hell does it look like once the starter comes out? I mean, you want to talk about this getting ugly. It's going to be wildly ugly. And to be honest, Whitlock is the most notable candidate to replace Chapman if you get rid of him.
Right. No, it's going to be ugly. And when it comes to Jarren Duran, I think the Red Sox might have put such a high price on him, he's not going to go anywhere. But if there is a team that says, yeah, we are willing to take a chance on somebody that we think could turn it around and just cruise and crush it and be comfortable being himself wherever he's at, yeah, I think that could hurt us. And here's the thing. Any player that gets traded from Boston right now, I expect them to fully shove it against Boston when they do, because I don't think anybody here says, yeah, I want to, you know, I want to stay here. But at the same time, they don't want to leave. Like, this is a team with an illustrious, rich history. Unfortunately, it's just a bit of a joke. But if Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman get traded to other teams, I will hope that they beat the Boston Red Sox when they face us. Because you know what? You could have had them. You could have done the right thing and build a team around them. But instead, you had your finger where it wasn't supposed to be. And it shows, because that's what you got. You got a crappy product.
There's no one on this lineup that can touch Chapman right now. So yeah, if they did face the Sox, they're absolutely mowing us down. I'm curious what you guys think with the return. I think we agree on some of the assets that we have that are movable. What do you think a fair return would be? You know, Chapman on a short deal, an older reliever as good as he's been. I mean, are we getting a top five prospect, a top 10? positions of favor that you think we need more than anything? Obviously, offense.
Chris, yeah, what I was going to say is what I think is fair and what we'll get are completely two different sides of the spectrum because, I mean, we've traded generational talents, cornerstones of the franchise, and got nothing back. And then even when it looks like you got nothing, you trade those players away and they become something, which is also frustrating. But for Chapman, I think it's going to be very dependent on the team, Matt. If you get a team that's like clear favorite to win the World Series, you're like one of the upper echelon teams that is really going for it and haven't won in a while, they like a Mariners, and I'm not saying they would be like a team like that that's been on the doorstep just trying to get through. I could see them overpaying a little bit, maybe get a top five. I think for most teams, you're probably talking a top 10 prospect for Aroldis Chapman.
That sucks too, because what would you want if you were to trade something like that? It's going to be a prospect-laden package. You want ideally probably one of their top three, top four guys, probably someone in the back 10 and then someone in the top 20. If you're lucky, maybe you get something nice because Aroldis Chapman isn't going to forget how to pitch this year. And you got him for another $13 million next year. And you don't have to worry about your eighth or your ninth inning, depending on where he gets slotted in. That's it. What would I want? I would want a right-handed prospect that is near MLB ready that can mash 20 to 25 home runs. Because between Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, Masataki Yoshida, Caleb Durbin, and Monasterio, you still don't even have 15 home runs. You have nothing. You don't have anything with those guys. Durbin just hit his second and third home runs. Monasterio, I think, has two home runs, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yoshida's got one. Roman Anthony, I think, had one before he went down, and Meyer probably has two. So I want at least one right-handed prospect. Terry and I were talking about, you know, what position. I don't think I necessarily care. I don't think it needs to be shortstop. But if you get a third baseman or a first baseman, that would be ideal. Because then you plug the vacant black hole that was the spot that Tristan Casas was supposed to fill in 2024.
Just get an infielder, to be honest.
What's up?
Just get an infielder. Like, it just needs to be a right-handed infielder.
I want a good infielder. I want someone who projects with a little bit of power. The other two guys, one could be like a Dave Roberts type. I don't really care. And it would be nice to get maybe another outfielder because we didn't mention Willy Abreu. Is there a chance that he gets moved? Sure. Do I think it'll happen? No, because this team finds ways to mess up every single deal. Certain players make sense to trade. Certain players do not make sense to trade. Aroldis Chapman, if he's still a Red Sox in 2026, I'll be happy that he's here, but I will lose my mind because we didn't make the right decision. And he's already acknowledged the fact he will not be a Red Sox. He knows that his name's getting flirted with 29 other GMs. Hopefully 29 and not just two, because Breslow is a moron and only seems to know two GMs' phone numbers. But here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think Abreu right now just slumping a little bit, so his value is probably more towards the bottom. If he was lights out, red hot right now, I'd probably be okay moving a guy like him. I think whoever we move is probably going to have success wherever they go. That seems to be a trend here. Players leave our organization. They figure it out with other organizations, right? We can go down the list. We don't need to name any names right now. I mean, I agree with you guys. It's probably not – you're probably not getting the team's best prospect, but – we've actually seen this playbook before, and I hate to give this guy credit for some brilliant GMing a few years ago, but Cashman did it with Chapman back in the day. I don't think he's apologizing to Chapman, but when he traded him to the Cubs, they got Gleyber Torres back. I don't recall what his ranking was as a prospect for the Cubs, but I don't think he was like their top prospect back then. And then, brilliantly just re-signed Chapman the next year and got him back. And Gleyber, who... if you look back on it, he's been an okay player, but he came out of the gates pretty hot. He hit 38 home runs in his second season. He hit 24 or more home runs four different times. So, you know, his numbers trended that way. Obviously, I'm not saying literally get back Gleyber Torres, but that's the type of prospect that we need. He was major league ready. They traded him. It must have been the 2016 season because the Cubs won the World Series that year. And his rookie year was 2018. So he was 2 years away, came out hitting 24 bombs his first year, 38 the next year, right? 162 game average, 24 bombs a year. So that's a right-handed infielder. We need Gleyber Torres 2.0 out of a Chapman deal. I think that would be it's probably reaching for the stars if we're talking Craig Breslow making that move. But that if we could somehow replicate that type of return, that would be ideal for us, I think.
I was curious real quick, where did he rank? It says here, Chapman goes to Cubs for Warren and three prospects. This is on July 25th, 2016. And it said that at the time, they were getting 19-year-old Gleyber Torres, Chicago's top prospect. Their number one prospect. So what's the difference here? Aroldis Chapman was 28 years old then. So a little bit of a different story. He's not going to, you know, he's 10 years older. He's still throwing 100 miles an hour, which is insane. He's just built like a moose. The guy just is indestructible.
He's arguably pitching better than then, but also, you know, it was only a couple months of control that year in 2016 because he re-signed with the Yankees the very next season, and we have him an extension for next year too, right? So you technically get a better pitcher with more control. Obviously, the age is there, but I think we all agree he's just an outlier with what he's doing, and I'm I'm perfectly comfortable with that contract, and I want him on our team, of course, but the position we're in, that's the one we can get the most the juice we can get the most squeeze from right there.
It does make you wonder what would have happened to Aroldis Chapman in his career if he was actually just left as a closer. How many saves would he have? How many saves would he end up his career, you know, end his career with? You know,
that's you guys maybe want something some good like, news.
Did he get fired?
Is there breaking news on this?
No. I said good news, not great news. So good news is the Yankees' top prospect right now is George Lombard Jr., who is a right-handed infielder. The bad news, Craig Breslow is still our GM, so there's no way he can execute a trade to get George Lombard Jr.
Yeah, Breslow is the type of guy that would find a way to jump out of a boat and not get wet. Like, that's the type of guy you're dealing with. Like, I read the alphabet forwards, you read it backwards. Craig Breslow's so stupid he reads it sideways. Like, how do you do that? But Craig Breslow finds a way to do the undoable, right? It's like you go in a straight – there's one way to exit a room, right? Like, Craig Breslow can't find a way to get out of a room with – open doors. He just can't do it. He just can't comprehend how to get it done. And what it looks like for all of us is he's in a room with no doors and no windows, and is that's Breslow. But I'm now personally at a point like I'm done yelling, I'm done screaming. This is the Boston Red Sox. This is where we are. You know, I've accepted it. I've accepted the fact that this team is below mediocre, and we are going to continue sucking for a while.
Yeah, I mean they're. The odd thing about it is, as terrible as he is with trades, he kind of only trades with a few different people, right? The Brewers, who hosed us several times. Obviously, our old friend Chaim Bloom. And then, you know, I don't think we should be calling Atlanta anytime soon for another trade with them, because we also got hosed with them. So, I mean, what GMs are really even willing to take the call? He clearly seems to, I mean, obviously it's well documented. He's a poor communicator. I think you can kind of see that if you're just seeing
him. He's a jerk.
Talk. He doesn't make eye contact with people. He's just, you know, he seems disinterested in being there. And I'm sure he puts in the time and effort and quote unquote works hard, right? And those computer models are working overtime. I have no doubt about it. But, you know, we live in the real world, and I think he struggles in those real world situations. So it's just, man, it's not a fun spot to be in, huh? Rooting for these guys. It's been a terrible season.
The boogeyman checks his closet for Craig Breslow before he goes to bed. There's so many jokes you can make about this. It's just insane. I bet Craig Breslow tells other GMs what they should do to help their teams out. He's probably that guy giving unsolicited advice. Oh, you know, this, I think this would really help you guys if you did this. I can picture it. That's the sad part. Like, I can picture this absolute knucklehead douchebag, like, saying something like that, you know? It's like, oh, you know, if I was you, I would make this move. I think that would really help you guys out. I could just picture him doing that. but he can't help himself.
Yeah, this team is just so uninteresting and unwatchable at this point that, I mean, outside of hoping that Breslow gets fired, like, there's nothing to root for. There's nothing that I even pay attention to other than when I'm on the show. Like, I don't even watch the Red Sox at this point unless I'm on an episode because I just don't want to. Like you said, Charlie, it's like, I know how bad they are at this point. So, like, why, you know, they say, like, you can't look away from a car wreck until you see it 162 times. Like, I don't need to watch a car wreck 162 times. I just don't at this point. So I watch the teams I hate more than the Boston Red Sox at this point, just hoping that they lose because that's more interesting.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of fun things to root for. I mean, heading into the season, I would have said Roman Anthony is kind of a must-watch, a must-see at bat. Obviously, he's let us down this year. I really do enjoy watching Early and Tolley pitch, but it ends up being a frustrating event because they're usually dealing going six-plus with two or less. You know, they're giving you a quality start, and we're just finding a way to keep it close and then epically fail at the end of the game. So I guess Sadon has been a bright spot. He's been taking a step forward if we can, you know, look for some silver lining. But, yeah, I mean, like I said before, Kennedy's comments were very glaring to me. If things don't change dramatically, i.e. if we don't go on a 9-1 stretch here, which we're not going to, then, yeah, all those aggressive talks about right-handed bats, they can safely land that parachute and say, well, what'd you expect us to do? We were out of it. It makes no sense to make this move now. When I think the real just catalyst of it all, the most frustrating thing is, what did you guys think? We all saw this coming into the year that this team is no power, no pop. We kind of got behind the staff and we could see a path to victories with that run prevention unit. But the run prevention unit doesn't work when guys are hitting sub 200 for 2.5 months. I know a couple guys have just crossed that threshold now. But yeah, what did we expect? And I don't know what projections he's looking at when, I mean, nobody on this team has major league experience. You know, how do we even know what the right situation or what the data and numbers show when Durbin was a one-year rookie out of the Brewers, right? He has what, 400 at bats? Meyer has 400 at bats in the bigs. I mean, at what point do we realize that we haven't developed major league players in a decade? Devers was the last prospect that we brought up who turned out to be a certified, legitimate big leaguer. So, yeah, things need to change. Unfortunately, I don't see him changing anytime soon.
No. And to make matters even worse, forget about players that you're not trading. Garrett Crochet, a day ago, the lat strain a lot worse than they thought. He has not pitched since April 25th, and they said it was going to be a limited timetable, right? He was going to come back after a couple weeks. Meanwhile, Tarik Skubal was going to be out for several months. Tarik Skubal sneezed, took a breath, and he's back. And Garrett Crochet is not going to be coming back. They asked him, you know, when are you planning on coming back? Do we have an idea? And he just said, I don't know. And we're going to, you know, undergo further testing. Just another Boston Red Sox moment to...
I mean, there's no need for him to come back. He can slow play this injury now. And in Struble's defense, he's still pitching for his contract. He's still pitching for his livelihood right now. So I think it's cool that he, you know, took that alternate approach and is coming back. I'm rooting for him, actually. Crochet doesn't have to do that. He's already got his bag and he's set for life. So, and honestly, I don't really blame him for slow playing the injury either. There's really no need for him to come back. And even if he did come back, it doesn't really improve the team at all because the pitching has been really good all year anyway. So all we're going to be doing is adding another good pitcher, which you can never have enough of, but it doesn't fix our biggest problem, which is the offense. So we're going to have another guy that can go in there and give you 6 or 7 innings, 1 or 2 runs, only for us to lose 3-2 or 1-0 late in the game. And yeah, just 9 innings of torture every night.
Chris.
Yeah, Tarik Skubal's so good that he didn't even pitch today and they still won 11. They just 11-0. They heard he's coming back and that's the impact he has. But you touched on it kind of, Matt, as far as like this team just has nothing that's like nothing to be excited about. Like there's nothing about Roman Anthony that excites me, even if he were to come back based on what I've seen. Again, limited sample size. But that's
true. So sad. I know. That's so
sad. I'm more excited about Marcelo Meyer on a daily basis than I am Roman Anthony, because at least you're like, all right, he could flash the glove once in a while defensively.
Maybe the toe tap. Maybe he's got the toe tap working and he turns it around. At least he's making adjustments.
But the thing is like, and even then, like, they don't excite me at this point. I've seen enough where I'm like, these guys are not going to be the players that we had hoped they were going to be, unless they somehow have some sort of like obsession and we just break a twig and wish that they're a player that's completely different. But the pitching, like, it's been good, but it's not like Jacob DeGrom when he was on the Mets, where it's like, God, man, if this guy just had an offense, he would be the best pitcher to ever live. Like, they've been pitching well. And yeah, we'd probably win more if we had a decent offense. There's no doubt about it. But like, none of them are like great pitching, because Garrett Crochet's hurt. And even then, he was kind of iffy even before he got hurt. And there's nothing in the pipeline. It's not like Bobby Witt Jr. And even when the Royals suck, it's like, man, but we got Bobby Witt Jr. We have nothing as Boston Red Sox fans. Nothing. Except Lions.
$20 cans of Coors Light. I don't even know how much a beer is at Fenway Park anymore, because I haven't been this year. And I went, I think 2 years ago was the last time I went. I won't go. I will not step foot into the cathedral until he is gone. I won't do it. I will not do it, because I won't give that mother, you know what, a dollar. I was so close to dropping it. Ooh,
probably 20.
I won't give him a dollar. Charlie. How much?
It's got to be about like $22. I was in Yankee Stadium the other day and a Coors was $24. So I would imagine it's probably about $2 less.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's I need like Dougie Sunshine jokes or like story time to try to get me past this. But for those that are watching the World Cup, Team USA, they're playing tomorrow against I don't know who, actually. I probably should have checked that out before I said it. Let me see here. Team USA is playing against Paraguay.
That's better at soccer than them.
Well, that's not going to be too hard. This is like the sixth best sport in America. But USA and Paraguay face off. It says 6 o'clock for me, which means 9 o'clock for you guys out on the East Coast. So anything else you guys want to add?
I hate it here.
Is it even worth breaking down the matchup here for the Rangers? I'll say this, though, about the U.S. soccer, and I don't follow it closely. They are probably better at soccer than the Red Sox are at baseball. So as bad as the U.S. soccer team is, I'm sure they're better against their competition than the Red Sox are against theirs.
Mike, that's actually – yeah. No, you're totally right. And thank you for calling me out on that. I did forget to do the upcoming series. But, I got Sonny Gray against is that Jack Leiter? It is Jack Leiter. He's having a – whatever year. Sonny Gray, all right, so Suarez is going against this sucks. Ranger Suarez is facing Jake DeGrom. Ouch. Conley Early is facing Nate Evaldi. Ouch. I think there's only a chance that we win game one. Otherwise, we get swept again.
Get the brooms, boys.
You think it's going to be a sweep?
I hope it's going to be a sweep. I don't want to see this team win, because there's nothing good that's going to come from winning. What, we're going to go after a right-handed bat if we win? Even if we went 9-1, like Matt said, what does that really do? He'll trade probably the only thing that's good in the pipeline to get that bat for a team that doesn't deserve, you know, two nickels in their pocket.
We're very close to a sweep, I think, coming up. I don't have any much of an idea of how good the Rangers are, but obviously we're not going to do well against DeGrom. I think Evaldi's going to pitch with a chip on his shoulder. I think the only path to victory for us tomorrow is if Leiter gets into trouble with, you know, his location, and we somehow work the count, and we somehow get some traffic on the base paths via some walks, and then maybe for once a well-timed hit, because they're certainly due for it. But yeah, if at best, I think we win one of these next three.
We are. Have you guys looked at the home and away splits for the Boston Red Sox? The Rangers are 34-34. They're in second place in the AL West. Do you guys know how bad we are at home?
It's got to be around a third, 10-20, 10-21, something like that.
The next worst team at home is the Oakland A's in the American League at 13-18. The entire division is almost at 20 wins at home while we are sucking hind tit here at 10 and 21. I mean, you have to try to suck that bad. It's almost unreal.
People still go. I don't understand it.
They want their
fancy cups and they want their pictures for Instagram. I really don't get it. Maybe it's the yellow jerseys. I don't know.
Smartest thing you did outside of, you know, marry your wife is get rid of your season tickets for the Boston Red Sox. That's the second smartest thing you've done.
That was, you know what? Hopefully she's not listening. That was the easiest decision I've ever made in my life. Second was marry my wife.
Okay, there you go. Well, I hope she's not listening to you. Yeah, exactly.
There's so many better ways to spend your money than at Fenway and on Red Sox. You just throw it in the wishing well, right?
Yeah.
And just
spend it on your
better chance.
You mean spend it on your wife? Exactly. No,
you know what's actually crazy about that stat, Charlie, is the 2024 White Sox won 23 games at home. I mean, before you know it, we're going to be halfway through the season. If we don't get like another three wins, which isn't looking very good, we will actually be projecting to have less wins than the 2024 White Sox at home.
We're flirting with that pace for sure. Wow. Oof.
That's pretty bad, but I will say I think we'll get it done. I think we'll get to 20. They went 18-63 away. Wow. They were
Charlie, if we trade Chapman, don't be so sure, my man.
No. You're totally right. A minus 306 run differential. Where, you know, all right, we're gonna end the show in a second here, but where do you guys think we are in runs scored on the list?
In the league?
In majors, in all of baseball, where do you think we are?
The Sox do once in a while have those like football scores, so I'm gonna say they're fourth from last.
Yeah, I don't have it up in front of me. It's got to be bottom three in the league and probably the bottom of the American League, if not second to worst in the AL, but definitely bottom three in the MLB.
I was going to say bottom of the American League, and like a week and a half ago, we were second from the bottom. I didn't think we were going to get up that far. I was going to stay there and worst in the American League. We are the worst in the American League. We are the second worst in baseball behind the San Diego Padres. At one point, we were in second to last to the San Francisco Giants. The Giants now have scored 31 more runs than us. The Giants. They have found a way to make a difference, which is absolutely insane. Now, the runs allowing thing, we're in seventh. We're in seventh place in the majors with run prevention. And that's behind the Dodgers, which is a juggernaut, the Atlanta Braves, which is a juggernaut, the Milwaukee Brewers, a juggernaut. The Padres have an elite team. The New York Yankees, an elite team. The Rangers, who we're about to face, and the Mariners. So that puts us eighth. And we just don't have bats. So annoying.
Craig Breslow got that part right. Like, I will give him a little bit of credit in the sense that, like, the strategy of, like, get a good pitching staff, you know, well-rounded, that's going to keep the ball inside the park and not give up a ton of runs. Great. We did it. He just forgot that you literally have to score a run because this team can't even score a freaking run.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yep.
One last closing thought, sure. If I may, sure. Because I don't know about the run scored, but I've got the numbers up right now. In 2,220 at bats this season, the Red Sox have 52 home runs. Cherry picking worse? A little bit. I don't know where it ranks in the league, but I just thought, you know, this guy, Kyle Schwarber, a little relevant, somehow a Red Sox legend for only playing a half a season with us. But we had a chance to sign him after that year, and we had another chance to sign him this year. In just his 5 years with the Phillies, he has 2,586 at-bats. Now, plate appearances a little skewed because he definitely walks a lot more than our team does this year. 211 bombs in arguably the same amount of at-bats. One guy has four times as many home runs as our entire lineup does in comparable at-bats this year. It's mind-blowing. I mean, just that one guy would have tilted. It could have tilted us from being six games back right now, 11 or 12 under 500, to actually being one of those teams that flirts with a wild card or potentially better. I mean, it
Well, I can confirm it now. We are last in the majors.
We are the last, Charlie. The second to last is, ironically, the Tampa Bay Rays, who are in the lead of our division.
And San Francisco has popped all the way up to 17th. They, at one point, were in last. They're now 19 home runs above us. And on paper, with RBIs, we are tied for dead last with the San Diego Padres. I mean, there's no excuse here, guys. Like, this is a dumpster fire team. We are singles merchants. We don't hit home runs. You hit triples, congratulations. Who cares? We're in the top 10 for doubles, congratulations. Who cares? But we're not hitting home runs. We're not doing well with runners in scoring position, and we just find ways to just blow the game again and again and again and again. Anything else you guys want to add? That is going to do it for your newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, again, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Go Red Sox, because I don't know what else you can say here. And for those that are Team America, you guys have a big game against Paraguay tomorrow. So.